perform fruitive activity or pious activity for elevation to a high position. Manushyanam sahasrishu kaschid yatati siddhaye. Out of many attached to fruitive activity, one may be a jnani, that is, one philosophically inclined and superior to the karmis. Yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam viti tatvataha. Out of many jnanis, one may be liberated from material bondage, and out of many millions of liberated jnanis, one may become a devotee of Krishna. So again, the translation. Of the two energies manifest, spirit and dull matter, beings possessing living force, vegetables, grass, trees, and plants, are superior to dull matter, stone, earth, etc. Superior to non-moving plants and vegetables are worms and snakes which can move. Superior to worms and snakes are animals that have developed intelligence. Superior to animals are human beings, and superior to human beings are ghosts because they have no material body. Superior to ghosts are the Gandharvas, and superior to them are the Siddhas. Superior to the Siddhas are the Kinnaras, and superior to them are the Asuras. Superior to the Asuras are the demigods, and of the demigods, Indra, the King of Heaven, is supreme. Superior to Indra are the direct sons of Lord Brahma, sons like King Daksha, and supreme among Brahma's sons is Lord Shiva. Since Lord Shiva is the son of Lord Brahma, Brahma is considered superior, but Brahma is also subordinate to me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because I am inclined to the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas are the best of all. So there is some hierarchy then within the Lord's creation, within the material creation. And of course the material creation depends on the presence of the living entities. Aparayam itvasthanyam prakritim bidhi me param jiva bhuta maha baho yayedam daryate jagat. There's another energy, Krishna said, that's apart from the material energy. There's another energy, which is superior energy, which is composed of the living entities who are struggling with material nature, and they are sustaining the universe. So Prabhupada often explained that life comes from life, it doesn't come from matter. And matter is animated also by life, or by this, the presence of the souls, the spirit souls. And because the souls have a certain karma, they take birth in a particular position. Because they're full of energy, they cause that particular body to be active. So in this way, matter is it is brought to life, you can say, by the existence of the soul. The Mahavishnu, he glances over the material energy, and in, by his glance he impregnates these spirit souls into the dull matter. And in that way, everything is put into motion in the material creation. Otherwise, it would simply be what pradana. Pradana is just the sum total of material energy. But it becomes prakriti, it becomes into a manifested state due to this impregnation of the living entities by the Lord. And the living entities are always active. See, as soon as a living entity gets into a body, that body becomes active. It starts in a very seed-like form, but immediately there's action, and that seed-like entity, his body develops, just like in human being. The body develops within the womb. The child is born, and his body develops more to a fully grown person. And then, of course, gradually dwindles away again. This is a symptom of material life, the presence of the soul in the material world, that there are six kinds of changes. There's a birth, growth, maintaining for some time, producing byproducts like children or like trees produce fruits. Even there are other kinds of byproduct, waste products like that. Different kinds of byproducts are produced by the living entity in the material body. And then there's dwindling, and then there's death. Nobody can remain permanently in any one particular body. Even demigods who have very long lifespans, they also have to give up their bodies. Therefore, Lord Brahma himself, he could not give the benediction of immortality to Hiranyakashipu because he didn't possess it. But he gave him other kinds of benediction which somehow looked like immortality, and of course, Hiranyakashipu thought that he was invincible. He hadn't reckoned on the superior potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, within this material creation, the living beings who are entangled in karma, they do move according to a certain system. Actually, the living being, when he falls from the spiritual sky, he takes the human-like form. That's said in fourth canto. Another place Prabhupada said he gets the form of Lord Brahma. So, in any case, he gets some kind of superior form and he has the opportunity to again go back to the spiritual world. But if he doesn't take that opportunity, then if he doesn't listen to the instructions of the Lord, then he incurs karma. And if his karma is bad enough, then he has to go down into lower species of life. So once he gets down there, he's not held further responsible. See, suppose someone is given the body of a tree. Well, he's working off his karma, and the next life he'll come to a higher species. You see, otherwise, if he had to suffer karma for his activities, then he would go on staying in low species of life. Say a dog. A dog is performing, by our standard, he's performing sinful activities. He's eating meat. He's engaged in illicit sex life. Maybe gambling intoxication he doesn't do, but but some principle he's breaking, you see. So if he had to suffer karma, he couldn't come up. He's already suffering from his previous, when he was a human being, suffering. So therefore he's being gradually relieved. He's working it off, this karma. And so he's moving up through the species. So in that sense, there is some evolution. Prabhupada is, you know, speaking here in a way almost like he's, you know, giving some support to the material scientists, but he's agreeing with them, in one sense. Usually he's attacking them, but sometimes he agrees, you know, just to bring them to a slightly different point of view. Yes, you know, what you're saying is, you know, is very interesting, it's very good, but actually, the real thing is you're almost right, you know. You're very intelligent people, and you almost guessed it right, you know, but just a little bit, you know, alter your understanding a little bit, and then you have it right, you see. So like that, he's saying the living entities evolved from vegetables, and grass and plants, you see. Matter has the potency to manifest living entities in the form of vegetables. So that's a very low birth. Someone goes down to vegetable. Can you imagine it? Cauliflower, some root vegetable, potato, you know, living under the earth, you know, so very, very damp, very, very dark, very dull consciousness. But you know, it's almost like, you know, potatoes, they almost look like stones, right? Under the earth, but you know, somehow or other, of course, potato is considered king of vegetable. Prabhupada said that, king of vegetable. You know, so the potato is enjoying a very great prestige. So those vegetables, you know, after they work off that species of life, you see, then they can move up to something higher. Gradually, they can become a worm. See, so they can move then, and then they can come up higher, like that, insects, animals, and of course, among animals, certain animals are more elevated than others. Prabhupada, he said personally that from the cow, lion, or monkey birth, the next birth will be human being. Cows are considered in mode of goodness, monkey in passion, lion in passion, and monkey in ignorance. So from those species one can come up to some corresponding human species like that. They sometimes say that cows are the future brahmanas. Cows are very pious animals. That's why one shouldn't kill especially cows for eating. There's a corresponding karma depending how developed the consciousness of the living entity you're killing is. See, when you eat a vegetable, you're killing that vegetable, isn't it? He's leaving his body so that you can eat. But his consciousness is more dull, so the karma is not as great as if you kill some kind of animal. But if you kill a cow, that's much worse than killing, say, a goat, because a goat is a lower goat or sheep. Or you find, say, like, you know, Thailand or somewhere, they'll kill things like, you know, rats and cockroaches and those kind of things. They'll eat. They'll eat those kind of things. So the karma is not as great as killing cow. And of course, killing human beings is worse karma. And because a human being is more developed, and killing a brahmana, this is the greatest sin. That's why we're singing every day in the Tulsi Puja. Yani Kani Chapapani Brahma Hatya Dikani Cha Pani Tani Pansani Parikshina Pade Pade. By the circumambulation of Tulsi Devi, all sins that one may have committed are destroyed at every step. Even the sin of killing a Brahmin is considered the worst kind of sin. So that's why Prabhupada said even to be a vegetarian, it's not good enough in the sense that it doesn't free you from karma. You still have to suffer karma for killing all those plants and vegetables. Of course, some sadhus, they would only eat fruits or berries or things, you know, they didn't kill the plant when they took them. Are they drinking milk because the cow is giving? So they're taking foodstuffs, and they're not, which doesn't knock anybody out of their body. So then that way they endeavor to avoid karma. But actually, just by breathing or by stepping on the ground, one is killing imperceptibly other living entities like germs and insects, very small insects. So actually, it's impossible to avoid some kind of killing. Jivo, jivasya, jivanam, it is stated, one living being is food for another. That is the way the material energy is set up. But if one offers all his activity to Krishna, and if one offers his food to Krishna, then Krishna, he is relieving one from the karma. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita, if one doesn't offer his food to the Lord, then a person is only eating sin. You know, no matter how, even he's just taking fruits, if he's taking for his own enjoyment, then he's implicated also. Because he's not acting for the service of the Lord. He's acting for his own interest. So we have to learn how to make our interest one with the interest of the Lord. How to use everything in Krishna's service. How to even cook for Krishna and eat for Krishna. You see, the devotee, when he's cooking, he's not thinking what will this taste like, but rather he's thinking this will be for Krishna's pleasure. And after it's offered, then a devotee, he's not just eating, but we say he's respecting prasad. He's honoring prasad because this is the mercy of Krishna. So like that, everything the devotee does is for Krishna. It is not for his own enjoyment or sense gratification. As soon as a person acts for his own sense gratification, then there is a question of karma. Then it becomes material. Prabhupada said that spiritual means everything you do it for Krishna. And material means there is forgetfulness of Krishna. So in this way, if one forgets Krishna, he becomes implicated in karma, and thus he becomes involved in this kind of gradual process of evolution, or else he becomes thrown down and he has to come up again gradually. In any case, he may be going up and down and up and down. He can go through so many species of life, nityabada. He can be eternally conditioned. He can go on forever like that. So this position of transmigrating through the different species of life is a suffering condition, because it means repeated birth, death, old age and disease, again and again and again and again. Sometimes it's a long lifespan, and sometimes it's a very short lifespan. It's like there's Indra, just mentioned here. His lifespan is very long. There's Indra Gopa. He's some small germ, and his lifespan is the shortest of all. And you could see that, just like you could go into India in the rainy season. There are so many kinds of insects appear, and they'll appear for a few days, and then again they disappear. You know, sometimes you'll see everything's covered in Mayapur. Everything will be covered in one particular kind of insect for a few days, and then gone. And then another insect. You've never seen it before. And again, like there's so many different types of species of life. So they're being constantly, the soul is pushed from one body to another body, to another body. And in this way, he's suffering this repeated birth, death, old age, and disease. But because his consciousness is very dull, he can hardly understand what's going on. So, but in the human form of life, one has the opportunity to get a clear understanding. But unfortunately, most human beings, they're also not able to understand. They're also just bewildered. They're living in a phantasmagoria of material sense gratification. And they're just trying to dabble in different kinds of activities, thinking they'll get happiness by that activity. So actually, these kind of human beings, they're low-class human beings, the Prabhupada said. Low-class, mlechas, pulindas, bodhas, and shabaras. They're generally addicted to all kinds of sinful habits. And so in a sense, they're not really civilized human beings. Although we talk about civilization, just like we say, the Western civilization. Of course, there is culture, there is music, there is art. There is some kind of, you can say, civilization. But it is misdirected civilization, because it is not centered on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Of course, previously, some hundreds of years ago, there was more God consciousness. Just like in Europe, you travel, Shakala Sambhara, traveling in Europe, so you must have seen many churches, beautiful churches, old churches. Some of them must have taken even hundreds of years to build, some of those churches. Paris, you went to Paris? So you saw this Notre Dame, or Rome, what is it? Vatican. So there are so many paintings there by, who is it? Michelangelo. So they're all architecture and art devoted to the Lord, to God. And music also, this Bach, Handel, you know, these famous composers. Some 300-400 years ago, their works are all religious works. So, and they're much more refined than the music of today. And you can see the music of today is very gross. It's very loud. You know, the louder it can be, then they think the better it is. And all the lyrics of the music is all, you know, just very gross, and generally just concerned with, you know, boy-girl relationship, or else it's just some crazy lyrics that, you know, doesn't make any sense at all. Simile art, so-called modern art, you know, they're just sticking, you know, some cigarette packet on a... onto a Coca-Cola tin or something. And then they say it's art. Okay. And the buildings also, isn't it? The building just, you know, concrete blocks they're putting together in Russia. All the buildings look the same, isn't it? Moscow, the whole city, just all apartment buildings practically. And they make the pieces in a factory, you see. They make like the walls, you know, big sections of wall in a factory. Everything is like mass produced, and then they just bring it to the site and they just plaster it all together. So there's no kind of taste or aesthetics in it at all. In Romania, they during the communist regime, Romania had many beautiful old, you know, towns and villages. And actually that area especially, you can find southern Poland, southeastern Poland. Is that city? Krakow. Did you go there? It's supposed to be very... I've not been there, but I heard. Very, very beautiful city. There's another city in Ukraine called Lvov. It's a very beautiful city. One of the most beautiful cities in the world, I think. So that also Romania was all part of the same country, I think, at one time. So that had many beautiful old places. But the government, you know, in the name of advancement, they knocked everything down and they built these agro-industrial complexes, they called them. You know, just apartment buildings. And you forced everyone to live in these little apartments and go and work in the factory. So this is real, you know, Kali Yuga, real Ugra Karma. Then, you know, just wipe out all the culture. Practically in Russia and those Soviet countries, all the culture just, you know, flattened. You know, the Muslim countries, you know, they had all their... Also Muslim religion and practices and, you know, just flattened practically. Of course, that's good in a way for Krishna consciousness because the people are more, you know, receptive. Now they're taking to religion, but they don't know anything about their own religion, so they are willing to take up Krishna consciousness. That's one good, you can say, aspect. But factually, there's no feeling of God consciousness practically anymore. And it's a country like this, New Zealand also, is founded much later in a sense of developed by the Westerners much later. So there's not the same old religious tradition and culture in this country, isn't it? Although to some extent you'll find, but not nearly so much as you find in Europe. So we can see then within a few hundred years the human society has actually degraded so much. It's changed so much. And they've given up their God consciousness so much. And previously people did follow some kind of moral codes, you know. No illicit sex life, no, at least not nearly to the extent that one finds today. There was respect for the institution of marriage. But now it's all breaking down more and more and more. So this is a demoniac civilization. The prophet has said here, it's stated in the next purport, he said, no one respects Brahminical culture. Demonic civilization is attached to Ugra Karma. Horrible activities and big industries are created to satisfy unfathomable lusty desires. Consequently, the people are greatly harassed by government taxation. The people are irreligious and do not perform the sacrifices recommended in the Bhagavad Gita. So, nobody is educating them what to do and what not to do. So because they have no information, they're just blindly following what the blind leaders are encouraging. So the blind leaders are out to exploit people and tax them as much as possible. So they only encourage them to engage in activities which will produce as much income for the government as possible. So therefore they're encouraging, you know, this drinking, smoking, illicit sex life, meat eating, etc. They're encouraging. This country here is practically founded upon meat industry, isn't it? This is one of the biggest industries. Australia also. I saw an article that devotees had pinned on the board at New Nandagram. The number of cows cattle, mainly cattle for slaughter, is much greater than human beings. You know, maybe 3-4 times the population. They're just breeding all these animals for slaughter. And it's also creating some environmental problems. So every year there are billions of animals being slaughtered all over the world. Actually billions when it's all counted up. So in this way, human beings are creating horrible karma for themselves. And Prabhupada said the result of this will be war in human society. This is a reaction you cannot just go on doing whatever you like and think you can get away with it and not have to suffer. You'll be forced to suffer by the laws of karma. So people need to be educated. What is karma? How does it work? How to become free from karma? So that's the science of Krishna consciousness. That information is here, you see, in this verse here, explaining how there's some hierarchy, some evolution through different species of life. How this karma is working. So if we become educated in this way, we can learn how to go back to the spiritual world, how to get free from all this bondage in material existence, how to realize our true identity and our eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's very nice here that the Lord, his incarnation as Rishabhdev, he's explaining the hierarchy and he's explaining how he's superior to practically everyone, but then he's saying that Brahmanas are superior to me. So Krishna is like he's like a devotee of his devotee. Krishna likes to see his devotees glorified, and he offers respects to his devotees, just like when Sudama came to Krishna's palace. Krishna bathed his feet, offered obeisances, offered worship to him, and sprinkled the water on the heads of his family members. So Krishna likes to see that. He likes to be called by names which refer to pastimes with his devotees. Parthasarathi or Yasodanandan, Nandanandana. This is very pleasing to Krishna because Krishna is always relishing different kinds of pastimes with his devotees. So in this way he likes to think of his devotees and he likes to give his devotees the all honor and superior position. Therefore Krishna wanted that the Pandavas should be successful in the battle of Kurukshetra and that they should rule the kingdom. And they rule the kingdom according to the direction of the Brahmanas. So Brahmana means one who's very conscientious, clean, studious, and eager to understand the Shastra, the science of Krishna, and teach that to others. So therefore Brahmins are considered as head of the society, and if there's good head in society, then naturally everyone will become educated in the subject matter that they're supposed to be educated in. Now they have different kinds of, you know, skills, different qualifications, but they don't have a real education of what is the real goal and purpose of life. So if that is added, then the society can become properly orientated again. Everything will become more harmonious and the Supreme Personality of Godhead will be pleased. So this kind of situation we have to create, even if we can't create it immediately in the society at large, we have to create a smaller society that Prabhupada has created, ISKCON. So we have to go on developing ISKCON until it becomes bigger and bigger and bigger and it spreads its influence among more and more people. So gradually, maybe not the whole society will become Krishna conscious. Prabhupada said that not everyone will become Krishna conscious because not everyone has sufficient brain substance. See, but still, if a small percentage become really Krishna conscious, then they can direct the others and help the others, somehow engage them in a way which will be purifying to them. Just as Krishna has explained in about the 12th chapter of the Gita, if you don't have a spontaneous attraction for me, follow the regular principles. If you can't do that, work for me. If you can't do that, give up the fruits of your activity. If you can't do that, you know, cultivate knowledge like that. He's given different guidelines depending on the level of advancement of a particular person. So even devotees become very prominent, powerful in society, doesn't necessarily mean that everyone will be able to come up to that same level. You see, but still, if they're guided by devotees, if the ruler is listening to the devotees, to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, and he's ruling in a pious way, then others will gradually become purified. They can be engaged to assist the devotees, or some way or another, to become purified, even if they don't realize what's happening. You see, still, if there's good guidance, just like in for example, India in old times, in the Marwari families, and you can still see it today if you go to, you know, sort of remote regions where the old culture is still very much in place. Sometimes we go to Burma, and there are many Marwaris, a very traditional old style. They have, you know, deity of the Radha Krishna in their home. Everything's very clean, usually all marble, and you know, they're pure vegetarian, never touched any meat or alcohol a whole life, and they're very pious, and usually they have some servants in their home, and some of these people are, you know, servants are very sudra type persons, not very intelligent, but the masters, they're looking after them very nicely, and they're giving them protection. So although those persons don't, you know, they don't have much brain substance for understanding spiritual life, still, because of being engaged in the service of persons who are much more pure and pious, then those persons are also benefited, you see. And our masters won't give them much money, hardly at all. They just give them food and shelter. And if they have family, they'll, you know, look after the family and educate the children and so forth. Because it is considered not good to give sudra a lot of money. What does he do with the money? You see these sudras working in factories. What do they do with the money? They go, they save a Friday night, then immediately they're going to the bar, isn't it? And they're, Lotto, yeah. And they're getting drunk. They're either going to, you know, engage in intoxication, meat eating, illicit sex life, or gambling. Immediately, as soon as they get money, they're wasting it. You see, so therefore, better not to give money. Just like in Australia, they're giving money to the Aboriginal persons, and they just spend it immediately, isn't it? The whole paycheck. They come into the town from the desert. They get a paycheck, and immediately they go into the bar. That's all, and they just stay inside the bar, and then, you know, if the bar closes, they just go out and lie down in the street, and then as soon as it opens again, they go back inside until the paycheck's gone, and then they go back into the desert again. So this is a foolishness to give money to such persons. It's a waste of money, and the persons are also harming themselves. Just like you don't give, you know, a bottle of whiskey to a child, do you? You know, they drink it, and then break the bottle and cut himself or whatever, because he doesn't know what to do and what not to do. So like that, there has to be some good guidance in society, so that persons who are not much better than children, they can be protected. And they can also, their energy can be used in a productive way in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if that spiritual leadership is not there, then it is practically hopeless. And everything just becomes more and more degraded. And then, you know, they're developing their so-called scientific technology, advanced technology, and building all kinds of weapons. They're very expert. They've manufactured so many amazing kinds of weapons. But what is the use? They're just going to blow everything up and damage everything and harm one another. So this is the unfortunate predicament in Kali Yuga. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he was pushing forward with great enthusiasm and energy this Krishna consciousness. He was writing books, pushing forward book distribution, because he knew that in this way we have to get the information to the people. So just like the communists in Bengal, they spread their teaching by printing literatures. The communists, the Russians, they were producing a magazine, Soviet Union or something. print all the color work on the pictures, and then they would print in the black and white on different languages like Bengali, all these African languages, Vietnamese, all these different languages. They're printing so many languages of the world. And then they're shipping them out all over the place by millions and millions of copies. So like that in Bengal, they were distributing these, you know, and describing, you know, how wonderful the Soviet Union is, and all the progress that they've made, in showing the, you know, pictures of the farm machinery and the pictures of the towns and cities and all the rest of it. So, you know, those simple people, they thought, oh, this is very wonderful. So they also became communist like that. So probably just like the communists have spread by the literature, so we can also spread by our literatures. So like that, if we distribute more and more, then people will be getting the information. And then they'll have questions, of course. Some of the persons will be attracted. And the devotees have to be able to answer the questions and show by example how to put this knowledge into practice. It's a fact that, you know, people out there, they're reading our books. When I was in Italy, I was invited to do a talk show on a radio, our radio, Radio Krishna. And it was very nice. It was about an hour. And people were ringing in, asking questions. And all the questions were very intelligent questions. They were ringing in, I've got the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and in the, you know, Madhya Lila, Volume 4, text such and such, it says such and such. You know, please explain, you know. Like that, so many questions were like that. And people are listening to Bhagavatam class on the radio every day, going to work. So like that, there are so many people out there who actually attracted to Krishna. Maybe they're not at the stage of coming to live in the temple, but the more we distribute this knowledge, the more people will gradually become purified and able to take up Krishna consciousness. So this is a gradual process, but we should go on with determination so that the standard of spiritual life becomes more widely known and accepted in society. So then the whole society naturally becomes purified. And it's going on to some degree, isn't it? They are closing slaughterhouses, more people are becoming vegetarians, more people are coming interested in reincarnation, in yoga, in meditation, in some, what we could say, sub-religious kind of principles. This is a byproduct from preaching Krishna consciousness. And those who are more intelligent, they actually grasp the philosophy and take it up and practice in their own lives. So then they can become Vaishnavas and Brahmanas, and they can become very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All right, any question or comment? Yeah. No, they would be incurring, because they're generally more intelligent persons. Nard Muni was a Gandharva previously, and he was disrespectful to the Sankirtan party, and he was cursed to take birth as a son of a Sudrani. And for his activities, there was some kind of reaction. Of course, that was also the blessing of the Vaishnavas in one sense. But anyone who is in a position where he knows, you know, what to do and what not to do, where there is some religious or spiritual knowledge in the society, then he's responsible for his activities. That I can't comment on. And probably hasn't said anything here in the purport. Usually we understand that ghost is it's actually not a good birth. It's mentioned here as superior because they have no material bodies. But in other ways, they're definitely inferior. Just like the Asuras are also, you know, they're mentioned as superior. Well, they're very powerful, big Asuras. But in another sense, they're inferior because they're very demonic. And there may be different conditions, you know, for the different particular species. But so far I can understand, at least in demigod society, there is information. Obviously there's information. What to do and what not to do. And if one doesn't follow, then you would be subject to reaction. Right. They should have known what, you know, they should have known not to behave like they did. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you spoke about intelligence being able to be conscious. But in many ways, what we call intelligent people seem to be very empty. I mean, the skeptics of that in New Zealand seem to be college professors and lecturers at university. So the difference is intelligence.
Yes. It's not considered real intelligence because they don't understand who they are. They don't understand who is God and what is their relationship with God. So it's not real intelligence. They have some skills, you know, that's all, some mundane skills. But of course, they're generally more intelligent than a common person, and therefore Prabhupada did encourage us to preach in the universities and, you know, disseminate Krishna consciousness to these persons. And that's why he also established the Bhaktivedanta Institute, especially to preach to the scientists, because he knew that in the modern day and age, people, they follow the scientists. The scientists are like their gurus. So if we can make the scientists God conscious, then are the leaders God conscious, then they'll automatically influence the other persons. But because they've got some mundane knowledge, they tend to be puffed up. So they don't like to, you know, they don't like to hear that, you know, that they don't have the best knowledge. They don't like to hear that. They also think that by their own intelligence, they can ultimately understand everything by experimental knowledge. So that's an impediment. Sometimes a more simple person can actually grasp or accept Krishna consciousness more easily because they're more humble.
In the example of the deities, like, for example, Bhumi, Mother Earth, Jamuna, how Krishna book and so forth, as a personified form that appears, in that sense, is the actual material nature is really, I'm trying to understand whether it's actually, Prabhupada talks about how there are certain stones in any, for example, in the nose, which is conscious and it's growing, you know, and so is the actual dull matter actually dull, is it? Or is there certain parts of the material nature which are dull, and other parts which are the soul prison? I mean, Prabhupada talks about them sometimes about stones in the soul, or you have a soul affect a certain body.
That means the soul can be present in that situation. Generally, it's referred to as dull matter. And Krishna is making that distinction. Bhumirapo nalalaka. There's an eightfold material energy, and then another energy which is superior, which is the living entities. But still, you know, Prabhupada has said that in certain circumstances, the soul may be present in a stone, a mountain.
So then these deities like Ajit Bhumi, is she conscious? I mean, you know, is her body the actual planet Earth?
She's conscious because Prabhupada said that she's disturbed by material that's taking oil out of the surface of the earth, or by the, you know, movements of the impious kings on the surface of the earth. By King Vena, she was disturbed. She didn't want to produce sufficient, you know, she stopped producing sufficient foodstuffs. Yes.
Mm-hmm. We just mentioned that the aquatics, that they're lower than plants. So one might argue that there's less karma in eating a fish than eating a plant. So what's the understanding there?
They're lower in the sense that they live in the ocean and, you know, generally this is not very clean down there. And they eat all kinds of dirty things. So in that sense they're lower. And if you eat them, then you're also eating, you know, not clean things.
Is there less karma? Just like a vegetarian eats the plants, a vegetarian eats the carrots, different things. And some people eat fish. Is it less karma?
Well, whether it's more or less exactly how much, there is karma. Mm. You see, there is karma.
Just a point, yeah, a question before I head from Ashura Pratap, speaking to Malcolm, been saying that wherever there's a God, there's a living entity. He's saying that God is present within the earth, and Pratap is saying yes.
Dormant condition.
Mm-hmm. What about, say, it's a whale, and modern science says that a whale has the same equivalent intelligence as man. Are they also, might they be the highest among the aquatic life forms, or what? Because I think the sense thing is where the shower, they're very excited and receptive, like if one goes on to a beach, the others go to comfort, and they all kind of end up dying. They're very much compassionate and attached towards each other.
How would they be defined by this
Yeah, I mean, obviously among the aquatics, some are superior to others. No doubt about that.
Maharaj, if you had an apple tree out in your backyard, could you offer the whole tree and save the...
Anyway, the system is that you pick them and then you offer them. So, I mean, somebody can chant his Gayatri and offer the whole world to Krishna. It's been done, hasn't
it?
Could you explain to me just how these ghosts get delivered by Lord Shiva? Because, I mean, what happens to a ghost in the Western world if they have no appreciation of Lord Shiva? I mean, how is he actually delivered?
Well, I mean, Lord Shiva's he's in charge of all the living entities who are, you know, in that condition. Obviously he has his system. It's like Yamaraj has his system also. You know, whether you're in the east or the west, if you're sinful, you're going to be taken to Yamaraj. It's not dependent on whether the living entity knows about Shiva or Yamaraj or he doesn't know.
It's just that I read in one of the purpose part of course that the ghost has to wait in a certain form until Lord Shiva or someone. It didn't actually explain how the actual ghosts. You know, for example, when someone dies, you actually need to offer some Hindu, some, you know, to go to Gaya or so forth and, you know, some Kashaya, right? But I was thinking for those just
Well, Shiva, Shiva, Yamaraj, they have the process. The person will remain in that body for a certain period of time and then he will work off a certain amount of karma or being in that subtle situation, and then, you know, he'll move on. That's all. Just like your people, you know, living is, they're moving through all the other species of life.
How about Newton, that the way he delivers them is that he places them into the wounds of women engaging with the sex. He delivers them from that ghastly body.
That's Prabhupada says that. Yes, because if someone is humble, he'd be more receptive and able to put into practice what he's heard. Whereas if someone is puffed up, then he'll always be challenging and then he won't be submissive enough to actually put it into practice. So, yes. In Lord Chaitanya says, in chanting, humility is important. Isn't it? Trinada Pisuna Chan. So it's also important in hearing. Important in every aspect of devotional service.
I do want to mention more about good offering, second shanti, whatever, should be done with me, the state, the other, I wasn't keep coming then. So, also, in class, that when it comes to Christian consciousness, it's like, you don't want to become. This is like karma, karmic actions. It's like when the fans turn off, it keeps spinning on an engine. So similarly, if I'm having some stuff kind of like mental or physical problems in Krishna consciousness, it's like that fan is just spinning. It's no reason. The fact is that that's Krishna's message, it's Krishna's blessing. So also, if one is having problems, would it also be due to
Yeah, that's due to anartas, impurities within the heart. And there are different kinds of anartas. One kind is offenses. So there are different offenses like material attachment and you know the 10 offenses to the holy name or the offenses to the deities. There are different kinds of offenses. Definitely cause, you know, misunderstanding and cause one to develop a mundane attitude. Or another kind of anartha is just the desire for pious or impious material activities. And another kind is any residue from one's previous sinful activities. There may still be some residue there. I mean, even the body that one has is a product of his previous activities, or the habits that he formed in his years before he came to Krishna consciousness. There's still certain attachments maybe there.
So when Prabhupada says, like, it's Krishna's mercy, how do we see that? Is it that you see that?
The point is, the devotee has to change his consciousness in trying to understand Krishna, see Krishna in everything. So even if there's something which is produced by somehow by his past activities, a devotee should try to learn how to act properly, and if there is some other tendencies that he sometimes feels, he should see that's just a test. Let me take it as a test from Krishna and not give in, you know, to some mundane desires or non-Krishna conscious desires. So in that sense you see it as Krishna's mercy, as a kind of test. Real Krishna's mercy is Krishna's instructions, and if you adhere to Krishna's instruction, then you'll overcome all the difficulties. Not that we, you know, have some mundane desire and we think, oh yes, Krishna's mercy, you know, let me pursue it.
Devotees, they should all just live together and expand in one particular town. Shouldn't be like a balance where, you know, like spread out and try to establish different towns and spend time and energy in on different peoples and distribute as much books as possible. You know. Seems to be like a movement. Is it expanding one town?
Devotees are also traveling, preaching, distributing books. Padayatra, you know, there are different programs. We do programs in different times. Many times we've been, isn't it? To different times. Huh?
It seems like it's like to establish some centers or something, you have to have times for people, you know, like if it's one or two persons or favorable, so energy should be put into it.
Yeah, so you visit them regularly? No, we also need to have our institution. Prabhupada said there has to be some institution. So both things have to be there. You want to join a traveling Sankirtan party?
Does the potency of prasadam, is that dependent on the consciousness of one who's honoring it? Or taking it, can I say? If someone's taking it in the mundane consciousness, does that prasadam have the same effect as if one is offering prasadam as one different thing in the world?
Obviously, if a person's in a more respectful consciousness, then he can appreciate Krishna's mercy more. So there is effect depending on who cooks it. His consciousness, and there is also, yes, effect depending on the consciousness of the person taking. But in any case, it is prasadam, it will benefit. It will benefit a person anyway, even if he doesn't realize.
So in other words, there's degrees of prasadam on the
time. Well, it's just like the holy name. I mean, it depends on your consciousness when you chant it. The holy name is always pure, but still, you know, if someone is chanting in an offensive manner, then you know there's like a cloudiness between him and the holy name. In fact, the sun is always shining. I mean, prasadam is always prasadam, but still, you can tell if somebody prepares prasadam in a very, you know, haphazard way. You know, you'll definitely notice a difference. And Krishna, you know, he's especially interested in the bhakti. If someone prepares very, very nicely and offers with great devotion, devotees will appreciate that. You know, this prasadam has been prepared with great care and attention and great devotion. So, I mean, there's some reflection of the person preparing it, and obviously there's also the effect will vary depending on the consciousness of the receiver of the prasadam.
There's a nice example where Prabhupada was giving some prasadam, I think it was puri, and he paid for them and he said, oh, who has cooked these puri? Bring them here. And he said that he could understand that he was doing his devotional service very nicely just by the way he cooked the puri.
That's nice.
things in the West, everything's the same, like the buildings where you've all got to wear the same pair of shoes. Is that a type of impersonal conception of atheism, like we're all in metal or something?
Yeah. In those countries there, those Soviet countries, they're much more developed that impersonal sort of way of organizing everything. It is, it's a reflection of such mentality. Mm-hmm.
Also, I'm just on the point of the Dal Mata question, how Krishna is actually the only that happens. So for the devotees that understand that, do we see it as being Dal Mata, or do we see it as being Krishna's energy, which is Krishna?
Yeah, it's Krishna's energy. That Prabhupada said it. Spiritual means you see everything connected with Krishna, and you use everything in Krishna's service. So then a devotee, he's on the spiritual platform. He's not in the material world of material consciousness. He's on the spiritual platform.
So I've got the sort of fear that I've stated on a level that we might not be able to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the example of a judge being able to sit on the seat with the extra time, so I don't know if you could explain that.
Well, the idea is that obviously one has to come to a certain standard. Before a person is initiated, he has to follow the four regular principles, chant 16 rounds for a year at least, and then he can become initiated. After another year or so, Prabhupada said he can become Brahman initiated, and that enables one to engage in services which will be purifying for the consciousness. So it's opportunity to increase one's devotional service. Of course, we can say there's some risk involved because some persons haven't been able to maintain their vows in Krishna consciousness. But still, you know, if everyone was too frightened like that, then nobody would get initiated. So, you know, this is a movement we are pushing on. Prabhupada was pushing on like this. So in that way, you know, we have to encourage devotees to come up to the standard. And if they appear to be maintaining a standard for a considerable period of time, then they can take a next step like that. And by taking the step and by, you know, following the rules and regulations or the procedures, Say one becomes a brahmana and is engaged in worshipping the deity, then that will mean further purification of the consciousness, and one will become more qualified. Initiation actually means it's a beginning to initiate. It's a beginning. So that's to give us a chance to, you know, to become more and more purified. So you have to have some preliminary qualifications, but it doesn't mean that, you know, you become a brahmana that's because you've already become, you know, like a 100% pure devotee, and then you get your Brahman initiation. They should just what? Eat till they wobble. Yeah, we become addicted to prasadam. See, a person is senses are uncontrolled and very desirous of sense enjoyment. So if we can enjoy our senses by eating prasadam, then it's purified. And gradually can gain some, you know, discipline and control in his eating habits.
And how many years does it take to
may go on a whole lifetime. Also, the devotees take pleasure in feasting. Lord Chaitanya, he liked to give devotees large amounts of prasad. To fill them up to the neck. So we, you know, generally, of course, Prabhupada advised that eating simply, wholesome prasad, but, you know, from time to time there are feasts. Every Sunday there's a feast, or there's certain days there's a feast, and then devotees can, you know, they can break out a bit and take a bit more.
Alright, an interesting question.
I'll speak for myself.
There's lots of new age groups going around at the moment. You've got white categories and the three categories you've got. So you've got psychics, right? People still with pendulum readings, crystal scouring, and develop all these healing powers. Then you've got, say, the mystical yogis that perform these yogic exercises to get powers, and then you've got the occultists where they use a little bit. So they've got a view. But what, say, all these people, right, they have a desire to develop these mystical powers, right, but they realise that God is the centre of all of this. What say they use these mystical powers in the service of God to help other people, and they realise these are good? What actually happens to them when they die? Do they actually go to their realm, to the ghosts or whatever, if they're dealing with it, or do they actually get elevated to a higher birth or something because, like, they're using their powers to help people in the service of God?
I can't give a general answer to this question because, the, you know, every person got his particular consciousness. If someone is genuinely pious, well, he will, you know, he'll get a better birth in the next life.
Could they go back to Godhead using this type of process if they realize
this? No.
Not possible.
They can be elevated. They may come to the point of becoming a devotee. You see, persons who are interested in mystic yoga or, you know, some kinds of such activities, that may help them to control their senses more, to follow moral principles more. Prabhupada even says in the one purport in the 12th chapter of the Gita that impersonalism can be helpful. I think just read it. The Prabhupada says so. the impersonal conception of the absolute truth is recommended only up to the time one surrenders himself for self-realization. In other words, as long as one does not have the chance to associate with a pure devotee, the impersonal conception may be beneficial. In the impersonal conception, one works without fruit or result, meditates, and cultivates knowledge to understand spirit and matter. This is necessary as long as one is not in association of a pure devotee. So, you know, some different kinds of processes can actually help a person to become more pious and then become ready to accept Krishna consciousness when he comes in contact with a devotee. But if he comes in contact with a devotee and he hears about Krishna and then he rejects it, well then, you know, that's not good. That's impious.
Ananda Swami said that in England, if the devotees have been having persons come to do like massage or colour light therapy and different things like healing, so would that be a way to dovetail that sort of desire if you wanted to work in that kind of field?
Yeah. As a service? Yeah, I mean, it's like there are different kinds of such skills, no doubt. It's like doctor, can use certain things in the service of the devotees. If somebody serves the devotees, then certainly that particular person will make progress more rapidly than others, much more rapidly if he's associated with devotees or serving devotees.
If one doesn't feel enthusiastic to take Brahman initiation, is there some kind of fault in the consciousness?
Well, a person may not feel themselves ready. So that means not sufficiently determined, spiritually determined. So might be better to wait if one doesn't have that determination or desire. Next. Any other questions? No, that's not wrong. Because you're attracted to do devotional service to Krishna, you want to expand your service. That's a good reason, provided that you're, you know, determined to follow the regulative principles. After all, the principles of Krishna conscious movement—they are Brahminical principles. No intoxication, gambling, illicit sex life, meat eating, chanting the holy names of God, getting up every day, going to the temple. They're all Brahminical activities. So if a person is able to follow those and then desires to expand their service to Krishna and is attracted to that kind of service, then that's good. We can increase our service to the deity individually and collectively. In that way. All right, I think we'll stop there. Sorry, Gandharva Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah.